Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, January 19th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Two Zimbabwean political activists face charges of allegedly insulting President Mugabe.
This is just a continued clampdown on dissent in Zimbabwe. We have noted the rising cases of people being arrested, charged and prosecuted for allegedly undermining the authority or insulting the president.
Gweru residents urge the government to get rid of a local commission running the city.
What is now worrying us is the prolonged stay of the commissioners, the prolonged stay on suspension of the councillors.
Harare City Council threatens to demolish illegal housing structures in low-density suburbs.
This is an immediate, we are sitting this with a lot of agents. We haven't given timelines yet, but we have given the first warning.
Victims of political violence demand law that may lead to their compensation.
And the Zimbabwe Warriors fall to Zambia in their first match of the Africa Champions in Rwanda.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
The Harare City Council is warning homeowners in low-density suburbs who built their homes without approval from council to regularize their plans or risk demolitions. The council has in the past targeted illegal structures in high-density suburbs, but now says it will conduct similar demolitions in low-density areas. Acting Communications Manager for the Harare City Council, Michael Chideme, says there is an overwhelming response of people interested in legalizing their building plans with the council today following a media blitz in the local press. Chideme urges those who want to legalize their plans to contact their local district offices urgently or risk demolitions.
There are new low-density suburbs that were built in the past 10 years. Some of them people have built without approved plans. The land that they built on was approved for housing. That, there's no doubt about that one. But people went ahead and built their houses, multi-story structures, without approved plans. So what the local authority is saying now is bring your plans for approval and the city can approve them so that we can regularize your stay in Harare. The people need city services like bin collection, they need water, they need roads, they need street lighting. So we can only provide those services if the people are paying their rent to the local authority and if the people are staying where they have built their structures with approved plans.
And which suburbs are you targeting?
These suburbs include, but are not limited to the ones that I'm going to tell you now. Gletwin, Pomona, Mountain and Heights, Belvedere Deer West. There's another one along Harare Drive in Neighbouring, between Neighbouring and Chinwold. But we have quite a number of these other suburbs and some of the issues which were built without the approved plans. So we are saying people, please bring your building plans so that they can be approved and your building can be checked for compliance with city building bylaws.
How soon would you start demolitions if people do not come forward and heed your call?
This is an immediate. We are sitting this with a lot of agents. We haven't given timelines yet, but we have given the first warning.
Take us through the steps of what they should do, should they find that they are not compliant.
Yeah, the person should bring proof of land ownership, either a title deed or agreement, still agreement. They should bring proof of payment of plan submission, based on the floor area and class of building. They should bring together them development permit and a copy of the building approval application, copy of certificate of compliance where applicable. So certificate of compliance is if there is a contractor who is providing services.
That was Acting Communications Manager for the Harare City Council, Michael Chideme, in Harare.
An organization representing Gweru residents says there's need to bring to finality the issue of the city's suspended councillors as the prolonged stay of an interim commission put in place last year to run the city's local authority is proving to be costly and worsening service delivery in the Midlands capital. Our correspondent Taurai Shaba brings us more.
Cornelius Elipiwe of the Gweru Residents and Ratepayers Association says although they had initially welcomed the suspension of councillors and the subsequent appointment of a commission to run the affairs of the city, locals are now unhappy over the commission's continued stay and delay in resolving the issue of the suspended councillors. Local Government Minister Sevia Kasukwere suspended all 18 Gweru councillors last August on allegations of incompetence and corruption. He also fired three of the councillors. Kasukwere then appointed a three-man commission headed by former Mashingo Town Clerk Tsunga Mangami, and it is still in place to date. Last week, the commission suspended Town Clerk Daniel Matau amid reports that investigations had revealed that council management was guilty of maladministration and corruption. Selipue says the final decision on suspended councillors is taking too long, adding that the prolonged stay of the commission is worsening service delivery problems.
What is now worrying us is the prolonged stay of the commissioners, the prolonged stay on suspension of the councillors without really their issue being resolved. We need these issues to be brought to finality.
Selipue said residents are unhappy that the commission is making matters worse, claiming that it has so far spent over 100,000 in such allowances.
The commission is actually doing the same things that the councillors were doing. They are also abusing council funds. They are also taking in a lot of allowances. They are not holding any kind of meetings with residents, even a stakeholders meeting, to find out how they can best help the citizens of Gweru. They are not answering to anyone besides the Honorable Minister who appointed them.
Studio 7 was not able to hear from Mangami or other members of the commission on the issue. When they were suspended, 11 of the councillors, including Mayor Mtendi Kombai, challenged the suspension as well as the appointment of the commission at the High Court. The court granted a decision in their favor, explaining that under the new constitution, the local government minister has no powers to unilaterally suspend or fire councillors and to appoint such a commission. Kasukwere was later quoted in a state newspaper as having said that the commission would remain in place because he had challenged the High Court decision. A lawyer who spoke on condition of anonymity for professional reasons said it was clear that the local government minister was violating the country's constitution and seemed to take advantage of the absence of the appropriate regulations, as most laws are still to be realigned to the new constitution. Studio 7 was unable to reach Kasukwere for comment. Development Studies lecturer Didmus Dewa of the Zimbabwe Open University, speaking as an independent analyst, told Studio 7 that while it is necessary to curb corruption in councils in Zimbabwe, the ZANU-PF government has often interfered with the running of some local authorities to frustrate the opposition MDCT councillors who have dominated in most urban councils. Dewa said there's need to implement devolution as enshrined in the new constitution and also urged political parties to choose the right people as candidates in order to help ensure that councils are run in an efficient way.
Let's first of all align our laws to the constitution in as far as local governance is concerned. We need the provincial council as outlined in the constitution. There is a lack of that political will to align our laws to a devolution of local governance. So we are saying let's align the constitution and then at the same time let's dismiss everybody who is corrupt and have elections held and have the right councillors in council. I wanted to send a message to all political parties, ZANU-PF, MDC, or whoever is in politics. Time to reward bravado is over. The politics of patronage. No. It's time to give councillors that are credible a chance. Let's have competent people in local authorities. Let's have benchmarks.
The Minister of Local Government has over the years suspended councillors in cities controlled mostly by opposition parties. In the 1980s, the then local government minister, Enos Chikore, suspended some councillors in areas controlled by PF ZAPU, claiming that they were incompetent and supporting so-called dissidents. The MDCT has found itself in a similar situation in cities like Harare, Chitungwiza, and others. Reporting for Studio 7 from Gweru, this is Taurai Shaba.
Opposition party activists Nyson Mudzuri and a polite Zambezian employee of the state-run Zimbabwe National Railways are facing renewed charges of allegedly insulting President Robert Mugabe a couple of years after the offences were committed. Mudzuri appeared in court today facing charges of undermining the authority or insulting President Robert Mugabe in 2013. He allegedly contravened some sections of the Criminal Law Codification and Reform Act. According to the state prosecutors, Mudzuri, who was first arrested and charged on September 9, 2013, before he was removed from remand and only to be summoned to stand trial currently, allegedly passed some unpalatable statements against the ZANU-PF leader.
Zambezi was first arrested more than 3 years ago while aboard a commuter omnibus after he allegedly composed and chanted a song with the lyrics, "Mugabe will be hanged like Saddam." Reporter Jonga Kandemiri speaks with Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights spokesman Kumbirai Mafunda about these two cases.
We have noted that in Masingo, a trial was supposed to commence today over the case involving Mr. Nyson Mudzuri, who was arrested and charged in 2013. And we also are aware that tomorrow in Menezi, there's going to be a case which has been revived there. The case involved Mr. Zambezi, who has been summoned to stand trial for allegedly insulting President Robert Mugabe. So today in court, our lawyers, Leslie Manaropa, actually petitioned the court and protested against the way the state was being conducted its business in court, that they didn't have the authority to prosecute from, which is normally issued by Attorney General Johannes Thoman, according to Section 34 of the Criminal Law Codification Reform Act. The one that they had was apparently signed by Chief Law Officer from Masingo.
Looking at these two cases, what does this show with regards to human rights and freedom of speech?
Yeah, without getting into the merits of the case, but just to, a quick comment on what you've asked, what does it show? We view this is just a continued clampdown on dissent in Zimbabwe. We have noted the rising cases of people being arrested, charged, and prosecuted for allegedly undermining the authority or insulting the president. Since 2010, as Babula for Human Rights, these are some of our statistics that we have. We view this as a claim down on dissent and that indication of continuation of harassment and troubling the citizens of Zimbabwe.
And that was Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights spokesman Kumbirai Mafunda in Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
Meanwhile, the trial of Harare-based journalists and two human rights activists accused of illegally taking pictures of a protected area in Zimbabwe opened in the capital today, with the accused denying the charges leveled against them. Our reporter Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
The trial of freelance journalist Edgar Gweshe and two human rights activists Donald Makubaza and Charles Chidakwa, accused of illegally taking pictures at the Harare Remand Prison sometime last year, opened at the Harare Magistrates Court today, with the defense team calling Gweshe to the witness stand. Gweshe told the court that he was outside the 100-meter radius prohibited by the law for anyone to take pictures of a protected area. The accused's lawyer, Tondere Batasara of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, told Studio 7 that Gweshe and the two activists are denying the charges leveled against them.
Mr. Gweshe and the others are facing the charge of contravening Section 5.2 of the Protected Places and Areas Act, in that they are said to have failed to comply with a lawful order to desist from taking pictures outside the remand prison. Today, Mr. Gweshe, who is the first accused person, testified in court, insisting on what he has already said in his defense outline, that he never received any instruction not to take pictures. And he proceeded to take pictures because that on its own is not an offense. He was arrested by a plainclothes prison officer who never warned him that he should stop. And then he was cross-examined by the prosecutor, and we will proceed tomorrow with the other two accused persons.
During cross-examination by prosecutor Francisca Mukumbiri, Gweshe told the court that there was no way that pictures of the Harare remand prison allegedly found in his flash disk could have been taken by him because he had no computer during the time of his arrest to enable him to transfer the pictures that he took from his camera to the memory stick. The trial continues tomorrow with Makubaza and Chidakwa expected to take to the witness stand. Harare-based freelance journalist Watmo Makokola says media freedom is now under siege in Zimbabwe.
Yeah, clearly journalism is under attack, especially from this political front. And if you look at it, it shows that there are hidden agendas that are rather political, which are pushing hidden agendas, maybe trying to deter journalists from practicing their duty freely. So journalism in Zimbabwe is under attack, and I think a lot needs to be done to solve this.
Charges against Gweshe and his co-accused arose after they allegedly took pictures of civil society activists who had visited the leaders of the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe in prison following a blitz on street traders. Despite the crackdown on vendors, the roadside traders are still playing a cat-and-mouse game with authorities in the Central Business District, as the vendors say trading is their only source of livelihood, given the country's underperforming economy. Authorities say the prison where Gweshe and his co-accused took pictures of the civic leaders falls under protected areas. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
an analysis of the performance of the South African rand in Zimbabwe.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has vowed Al-Shabaab militants will pay a heavy price for the attack Friday that reportedly killed dozens of Kenyan soldiers in southern Somalia.
And officials in southeastern Pakistan say a suspected suicide blast Tuesday killed at least 12 people and wounded many more.
Some victims of political violence want the country to craft a law that will ensure that they are rightfully compensated. This came out at a consultative reference group meeting in Harare, where some activists called for the slashing of the executive functions of the Minister of National Peace and Reconciliation, who they believe is likely to influence the outcome of the crafting of such a law. The current bill is silent on compensation of survivors of political violence. Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri speaks with Rashid Mahia of Heal Zimbabwe Trust about the proposed bill and compensation of victims of political violence.
The bill is not clear about issues of compensation. It's not clear that this is a remedy to the victims of violence or the survivors. It just gives a blanket statement. But the people were very clear that they wanted clarity and to be very, the deal is very clear that The commission is going to, there's going to be conversations with survivors of violence, and to be very explicit about the conversation and who then receives and who doesn't. But maybe that will be carried out if the law that comes in. Then I think also of importance was the fact that the bill does not decentralize. The law does not seek to decentralize the operations of the National Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
And that was Rashid Mahia of Heal Zimbabwe Trust speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. The further weakening of the South African rand has almost rendered it useless in Zimbabwe, where it is part of a multiple currency that was adopted to stem the historic plunge of the Zimbabwe dollar in 2009. The rand has become volatile and has been easily subjected to external pressures like export commodities and US interest rate hikes, depreciating on a free fall almost daily. Although on the official market the rand trades 16.7 against the US dollar, on Zimbabwe streets the currency is being exchanged 20 to 1 US dollar. Independent economist Rejoice Ngwenya tells Studio 7 the fall of the rand has resulted in the frequent use of the bond coin, a currency only recognized in Zimbabwe.
Not a new thing, really, because by October, November last year, as soon as the rand started plunging, most retailers in this country were refusing to accept the rand because they know that if they accept the rand, they will lose out when they are converting it into a US dollar to go in and buy elsewhere other than South Africa. So it is understandable why they have lost confidence in the rand because it gets to be eroded when it is being converted for import purposes.
And Mr. Ngwenya, what is the situation regarding the bond coins? Because we understand they have taken over from the rand.
Well, I'm not too sure whether it is correct to say they've taken over, because I do not think that if I had $1 million worth of bond coins, I would be able to get an equivalent in US dollars. What they have only solved is the crisis of change that we had already had. That was difficult to get change in the rand currency, but it is just a result of the lack of confidence that the Zimbabwe faces in the rand. I don't foresee a situation where the bond coin will suddenly transform itself into a bond note, and then we eventually use it substituting for the US currency, because there is no sign that the bond coin can be converted into US currency that can be used to import, say, capital goods.
But in terms of change, are these not being used widely more than the rand?
Absolutely. You know, in terms of change, they are being used. You know, that's what I'm saying, that they are only answering the issue of change, which takes people from point A to point B in transport, or from point A to point B in transactions. But whether or not a cumulative amount of bond coins can give you sufficient currency to convert into US dollars, this is what I keep on saying, it's unlikely to happen. So the bond coin has just become a currency of convenience for change purposes. But I don't think that it has assumed enough integrity and authority to be used to convert into a currency that one can use to import capital goods.
In other words, are we just playing around with the name? Because if we were to call the bond coin the Zimbabwe dollar, would that still work the same way that it's doing right now?
Absolutely, you're right. I think there's just a very, intelligent way that the Reserve Bank has been using the word bond coin. Because by any other name, if you put the dollar sign, you already have the same dollar as a coin. But that, in terms of the psychology of the people that that are associated with depreciating the same dollar, that is a terrible mistake because of the historical conversation. Because remember that the use of currency is to do with confidence as well. So once you call it the same dollar, it might slide back into the inflationary, hyperinflationary, mode that it assumed, notoriety. In 2005-2009.
Do you see the South African rand getting its strength that it had when we started off last year?
The issue of whether South African land can be strong or not is not a Zimbabwean issue. It's a South African issue. That will have to lead that South African. But I have got my doubts that it can recover from a position of probably 1-16 or 1-18, back to about 1-11. It will demand a lot of financial and monetary transformation of Africa. But for us, it has got long-term negative effects, because our trade deficit will keep on widening, because Zimbabweans will literally stop buying goods from Zimbabwe, and then it will totally destroy an industry that is already suffering under 30% productive capacity.
That was independent economist Rejoice Ngwenya. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare.
Remember to stay tuned to Studio 7's English broadcast tomorrow as we bring you a report on the role of Zimbabwe's two vice presidents.
Zimbabwean youth say they are disturbed with the escalating economic and political crisis in the country, adding this year promises to be one of their worst. But they say the country's fortunes may be changed if Zimbabweans can rally together and confront ZANU-PF at the polls in the 2018 general elections. Ntungamili Nkomo of Studio 7 reached the MDCT youth leader Happy Mo Chidziba.
Yeah, you see, this year it has been a difficult year. It is going to be a difficult year due to the failure of the government on civil servants, salaries, and the issue of bonuses. We have seen the continued job losses and that is no job creation. The continued inclusion in ZANU-PF by focusing on internal rather than service delivery. We see the continued police contradiction, especially on indigenization between Shuao and Chinamansa. We are likely also to see the increase in violence because of the introduction of the National Youth Service. That means ZANU-PF will be using violence through that youth service. I mean, what we can only say is the people from Zimbabwe are going to speak. And we have seen the emergence of NERA and ZINAP. That is our platform for issues as the progressive movements, as we push the people to act on the issues affecting them.
What exactly are you going to do as a party, as young people, to make sure your aspirations are fulfilled this year?
We are going to organize people of Zimbabwe. As the MDC assembly, we are going to organize people of Zimbabwe into the streets. We are only here to tell the nation that the streets will be our second home until our issues are addressed.
That was MDCT youth leader Happy Mo Chidziba on the line from Harare.
And in sports news, the Warriors lost 1-0 to Zambia's Chipolopolo in their first match at the African Championship in Rwanda today. Over to you, Chris.
Yes, we have on the line Edward Rema from VOA Central Africa Service on the line. How are you doing, Edward?
I'm doing terrific. How are you today?
We're doing fine. Can you give us just a brief breakdown of what happened?
What is happening to is that the African Nations Championship is currently underway in Rwanda. It's being held at four different stadiums, two in the capital Kigali and two from southern and western provinces. Today's games, Zimbabwe, like you just said, lost to Zambia, and the only goal was scored by Isaac Chansa. Right now, there's another game that is going on between Mali and Uganda. So far, the scores are 2-2. Just one thing that we might let our listeners know is that this particular championship features players who are active in their national championships and qualified to play in the ongoing season. So basically, professional players who play outside their championship, regardless of where they play, even in Africa, are not qualified to take part in this African championship of Nations.
Thank you so much. Our time has just run out. Would have loved to hear how they played. Thank you so much. We'll hear that tomorrow then.
Thank you.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live at Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. Today, our host on the Youth Connection, Thungamile Nkomo, will be talking with listeners and experts about youth and Zimbabwe politics.
And now, stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a very good night.